Well, I'm Hugo Disler from Farming Secrets. We have the pleasure to have online Hamish Mackay. Now, Hamish has been involved with biodynamics for quite some time, and Hamish, could you just introduce yourself a little bit as to, where you got involved with biodynamics, so just a very brief introduction to yourself, and then we'll start the ball rolling.
Thanks, Hugo. Hi, everyone. I come from a farming background in the southern tablelands of New South Wales, sheep and cattle. I'm a younger brother, so went off farm and did various things. I've been involved in wool broking, establishing the change in the way wool was sold in Australia. I then went and worked in a bakery back in the 1970s when, if you think of trying to buy wholemeal bread back then, let alone biodynamic stone ground wholemeal bread. So I had 12 years there. I've worked in England with mentally ill people, and for the last 10 years or more, I've been working doing biodynamic education work around Australia principally. In a nutshell.
So, Hamish, what's of interest to me is this, that I've heard of biodynamics. I used to have a farm supply store and had the pleasure of having Alex Podolinski come in and talk to me there. And then we sent the kids to a Steiner school. And then it was only then that I really got interested in biodynamics. Up till that time, I just thought biodynamics was something strange. It was something for, alternative type of people. But after reading a lot of literature now, old literature, and also reading, hearing that, Dr. Christine Jones and Elaine Ingham, that the cosmos or above ground influences are very, very important to plants. And so it's the way I see it is biodynamics is really the ultimate form of farming for everyone. The other thing of interest to you, Hamish, was that when I was selling natural fertilizers and natural stock supplements, numerous farmers would come up and sort of say, oh, you can get BD preparations from the BD people in Bellingen, and you don't have to be a member of the BD association. So I just I think it's our job today to have people and farmers understand that biodynamics is really for the main farmers to be using. So would you like to expand on that?
Yes, thank you. Look, it comes out of the work of Rudolf Steiner in the 1920s, and I've just read a sort of more recent history of all of that, but, this was the time when Germany was 11% unemployment. Hitler had just been let out of jail, and Ludendorff and all the things that became the Second World War were cranking up. At the same time, farmers were saying their land was not producing what it used to produce, and they knew Rudolf Steiner had done a lot of research on a number of fields of research and endeavor, so they asked him about agriculture. He gave a series of 8 lectures, and as most people who attended them readily admitted, they didn't understand a word he said, but they're lectures that actually seed into the future, and basically we have to work out how to make it work. What subsequently happened, he died sort of within 9 months and everything went into meltdown, and for many, many years it was held by a small group of people, ideologues and, genuinely good people, I'm not saying that, but it just didn't get out there. Now, fast forward and someone like Alex Podolinski arrives in Australia and picks it up and starts to get it moving. And that's how I met it, through Alex Podolinski. But he also was a product of the time, in as much as he wanted to keep it fairly tightly controlled because he was concerned that people would stuff it up and then it would get a bad name. We've now moved on another 30 or 40 years, and I've now come across biodynamics in all parts of the world. No, I haven't been into Asia very much. I've been into India. But the reports are, wherever you are on the planet, growing whatever, under whatever conditions, biodynamics is a very advantageous process. It's very economic for the farmers because it's based on their farm skills and on what they can in a way, recycle on the farm. So you're not dependent on huge inputs coming from outside, and you end up in total control of your own, the viability of your own enterprise in that sense. And again, as time moved on, Alex fell a bit behind because he stayed in his mindset when people were moving on. And so the Biodynamic Association was started in 1989, and increasingly we've been more and more open and just trusting we know it works, so we don't have to control it. If it's not working for you, then we can help you work out why, but there's no doubt that it works. And there's increasing sort of conventional research that's backing that statement. Most of the farmers don't really rely on that scientific research. They rely on the marketplace. In other words, what it's costing them to do it, and the outcomes they're getting from it. And that's really what drives farmers. Just as a story on that, when I went back and helped my brother on the farm for a while, and we got a grant to plant some trees, and my brother said, well, go see what the fencing game is. So I researched different fences. And, you know, I brought it to him and said, well, this is the short list of three. So he said, hop in the truck. And we drove, you know, 30 miles up the valley, over the hill into the next valley, and drove 30 miles back again. And we actually made the fencing decision on that trip, looking at which fences had stood the test of time over, you know, 30, 40 years. So the research wasn't wasted, but the decision was made on practical, you know, on the ground, what works. And that's really what drives most people to adopt biodynamics. Is that a reason?
No, that's good. But I think the main thing is this, Hamish, maybe you can talk about your sister's farm in Tasmania, but the message we really want to get clear to farmers, it is for mainstream farmers. It's not just, a particular association. I think when we keep talking about this, we've got to keep in mind that we want to be talking to the mainstream farmers, that there is an opportunity for them to cut their costs by using atmospheric influences to get things going in the soil.
Absolutely. That's my passion, is to get Australian mainstream farmers on board. When I first came across it in 1972, Alex Podolinski talked about getting humus into the soil, and humus will hold 70% of its own weight in water. And just, you know, having the 60s drought behind us, I was very aware that if we can get half an inch of humus all over Australia, we make ourselves drought and flood tolerant. And so that's my passion. I think Australia can lead the world in fixing soils and making it stable and productive. Australia loses 7 tons of soil per hectare per year right across the country, year in, year out at the moment. And that comes from a base figure of plus 0.5 tons. Plus half a ton goes to minus 7. So we can catch that up and more fairly quickly. You know, in 3 to 5 years, people can really, really get their soils active. And it's going to spread word of mouth. One of the biggest issues with biodynamic agriculture is that none of the stock and stations agents and produce merchants are going to promote it because they have nothing to sell. No consultant who makes money out of getting a cut on what they sell will promote it because there's no cap for them either. So it's also a completely different economic paradigm to the world that we live in. And if you look around the world at the moment at the sort of existing economic paradigm, what's happening in economy is really what the farmers of the 1920s were seeing happening to their soils. We're seeing it happening in the economy now. And we'll have to renew that too. And biodynamics is a way that farmers can actually contribute to that, because I happen to believe that culture really comes out of agriculture, soil culture. And from my sort of not great reading of history, when cultures, when civilizations lose contact, lose respect, lose value, lose fertility in their soil, that's when they start to head downhill very fast. And it can be very fast, like in 10, 20, 30 years. So, yes, it is for mainstream farmers. We're still trying to sort of clean up the wacky muck and magic sort of image that we accrued for ourselves over the last sort of 50 years. But that's happening, and as more people get interested in biological farming, then biodynamics will be a natural progression, because the biological farming for most people is just as expensive as chemical farming. So while it's an improvement, it's an economic standstill.
Hamish, you might explain the steps that you went on to Sister's Place in Tasmania, because that's a pretty practical way. What, you know, you would have chosen between making compost or putting out one of the BD liquids. Can you just sort of give us a sort of practical rundown how things started there, or any other farm, if that's not appropriate?
Yeah, look, the story there is my sister married a Tasmanian and lived there, obviously, and then her husband died 10, 12 years ago. And so she sold the farm, and she's now got a new partner, a real Scot, doesn't like spending money. And so they leased the farm together, about 600 acres, about 3 or 4 years ago when it was in the height of the drought. They took it over in April. The next-door neighbour had been leasing it for about 26 years, and he'd flogged it into the ground. They think he was hoping to be able to buy it cheap one day. Anyway, they took it over, and it was in drought. They're doing fat lambs, and they put the preparations out, I think, in May and again in October. And Margot said she'd never got all the lambs off before Christmas before in all her years in Tasmania, which must be nearly 40 years now. And, you know, they were gisting cattle before Christmas, and that was in drought. And just 2 applications of the biodynamic preparations. I should just say a little bit about compost. Compost is integral to a European way of farming, and it's a very important thing to bring in. But in our Australian large area, you know, range farming, and even our sort of more intense grazing country, to make the amount of compost to cover 600 acres or 1,200 acres or, you know, 200 acres is a phenomenal amount of compost, even though biodynamic compost you use much, much less than conventional. So the quick start is to actually use the biodynamic spray preparations. There's the horn manure, the winter horn manure one, to which we add what we call a manure concentrate, which is cow manure. In a wheelbarrow of cow manure, you add a large handful of ground-up eggshells. You add, similar or double the amount of basalt dust. Mix it up, put it in a pit in the ground, stick a set of our biodynamic compost preparations in it, and in sort of 5 to 6 months, you've got a real sort of concentrate of colloidal compost of cow manure. And then you dilute that at about 200 grams to the hectare. You can add about 20, 40 grams of the horn manure, and you stir that for an hour and put that out. Well, that's doable for large areas in Australia. So even if you then move on and do compost as well, this is something you can get your whole farm covered with fairly quickly. One family, they've got 6,000 acres, they use aircraft, they get the whole lot done in one day with an aircraft, and it costs them, with the aircraft, around about $2 a hectare or $2 an acre or $5 a hectare. And they've, now after about, I don't know, 8 or 10 years, they don't do it every year, they do it when they see the necessity for it. So, you know, it's not even in the end an annual thing. Once you've got a feel for it, you do it when you feel it's necessary. There are other, it's becoming more sort of, people are becoming more proactive in designing different ways to do it. People in Queensland with large grazing properties that you'd never drive over, flying stuff on isn't in their economy. It's never been there. Like in the Tableland country of New South Wales, you know, putting fertilizers out by air is part of their culture. You go into, you know, rangeland Queensland, that's just not there. So people are putting it in sort of hessian sacks and putting in their water troughs so the cattle actually get a dose of it and spread it out that way. So people are getting very creative how to get these preparations out within the farming culture that they're familiar with. And I think that's one of the things that Australia is leading the way, to my knowledge, in this sort of being adventurous. And the only criteria is, does it work or not? And anyone who knows a farmer, if it works, they'll think about doing it. If it doesn't work, they won't think about doing it. So it's just spreading, because the people who are doing it in all sorts of different ways are actually sharing their experiences. You know, sometimes over the barbecue, sometimes we hold workshops and open days and things like that. And it's spreading farmer to farmer. It has no, we receive no sort of credit or support or even really interest from the scientific community. It's too far away from where they can operate, but they can measure the results fairly accurately. And even if they don't believe in biodynamics, they are usually pretty impressed with the results. Another area of result, and again back to my sister, not only did they get their fat lambs off before Christmas, but you know, they sell into Coles or whatever, but they came to weigh them out and take them away, and you know, they want 20 kilo carcasses, so they weigh them out at 40 kilos to get a 20 kilo carcass, and what they found was that they were getting a 22 kilo carcass off of 40 kilogram live weight. So they're getting an extra 10% on the hook at no extra cost. And they didn't get downgraded for being overweight because the quality was so good. It was real, real tucker, not fat or you know, excess. And that's pretty consistent also. There was a B double of cattle went into one of the abattoirs near Brisbane out of sort of the Burnett area. And, you know, a week or so later, the abattoir rang these guys and said, any time you've got cattle like that, we'll take them. Yeah. And they were only seeing what was hanging up on the hook. They had no idea the farming practice behind it. So, you know, it's the people, in our case with our farm at Braidwood, when we started to put the preparations out there, it was the shearers that noticed first. We put the preparations out in, November and May, and I went into the shearing shed the following October when they were shearing the hoggets. And these guys had been shearing our sheep for 30 years, and they said, what are you doing different on this place? We've never seen sheep and wool like this off this place, and even taking the season into account, you know, because they go around the district, so they can calibrate for seasonal adjustments. But even taking that into account, they were amazed at the quality. So whether it's shearers, whether it's butchers, whether it's truck drivers who find they have to change gear earlier going up hills, even in our case in Braidwood, the local guy who paints houses recognised the colour of the property had changed, looked different. So my experience is everyone acknowledges biodynamics from the level of their specialisation. Their professional observation is what enables them to recognise it. Now, you know, how science catches up with that, well, that's for science to work out. It will do.
And
for a lot of scientists, it's actually no different to the story I was taught at school about Galileo, you know. the scientists of his day couldn't afford to look down the telescope, because if they saw what he said they would see, then the whole basis for their professional life disappeared. And that's a pretty daunting position to be in. So I don't push scientists, because I understand, you know, they have to make a living. They, you know, they've spent years training to become who they are. And if someone turns up and says, well, that's all a lot of, you know, ballyhoo, you can understand that they don't take to that too kindly. But, you know, in time, science is objectively science in the end. It gets pretty politically twisted, I accept. But ultimately, science will be science.